physically here again and virtually here second time. So I'm going to talk about some recent work that oops, this is a pointer. This is a pointer. Some recent work that we have done with the Stamperken group at Berkeley. They are an experimental atomic physics group. So I'll talk about how they've realized an optical Kagome lattice and some of the things that we can or cannot do in that system. I'll also mention some works that other people have done in the past, and that could be interesting for the system. And in the end, would like to hear ideas from you, especially if you have any ideas that are relevant to the experiment, that would be great. And also, this is going to be a very short talk, so I won't take too much of your time. Okay, so first of all, what's interesting about a Kagome lattice? Why look at it in the first place? There are two main reasons. One is the Kagome lattice has this property called geometrical frustration. What that means is, so this is a Kagome lattice. If I try to put red and blue dots on alternate sides, well, I can do that on this hexagon, but if I once I'm done with this hexagon, then it's not clear what color dots I should put on these sides. So there is no way to put alternate red and blue dots. There's no bipartiteness to this lattice. So that can give a lot of interesting physics. The second interesting property about the Kagome lattice is the fact that a simple nearest neighbor tight binding Hamiltonian on this lattice has a flat band. So this band here at the bottom has no dispersion, which means the electrons or particles in this band have no kinetic energy. So therefore, if you turn on even the smallest amount of interactions, it can lead to very drastic effects. So these are two main reasons why the Kagome lattice is interesting, and that's why we are trying to extract some interesting physics out of this. So this is a now what I'll do is describe the way this lattice is actually realized in the experiment. So it's an optical lattice experiment. What they first do is create a triangular lattice by shooting three lasers from three directions separated by 120 degrees. That creates a standing wave here. And if you zoom in, the pattern that you'll get here is that of a triangular lattice. So the bosons, so we have bosons in the system, rubidium atoms. The bosons go and sit at the minima, at the potential minima, which forms a triangular lattice. So the next step is adding three more lasers at twice the wavelength of the original set of lasers. So this creates another triangular lattice with twice the lattice constant. However, you can adjust the phases and ensure that the second triangular lattice is actually inverted, so the potential maxima from a triangular lattice. What that does to the original lattice is it eliminates 1/4 of the sides. So what we are left with now is just a Kagome lattice, and this is a three-site unit cell. So we first create a triangular lattice, add another set of lasers with twice the wavelength, and that removes 1/4 of the sides. We are left with a Kagome lattice. So that's well and good. This is experimental evidence that we do indeed have a Kagome lattice. Sorry, the pictures are not, the resolution is quite poor. Just copy-pasted it from the paper. So what I've shown here is the time-of-flight diffraction pattern. So in optical lattice experiments, a very standard measurement is you create your lattice and then suddenly turn off the potential. So then the gas expands, and the population in momentum space, the original population in momentum space, shows up in real space on your screen. So in the velocity is proportional to momentum. This is classical mechanics. And therefore, the position of the particles on the screen tells you their momentum in the lattice. So for a Kagome lattice, you can easily predict what the, or for most simple lattices, you can easily predict what the diffraction pattern should look like. And in fact, you can also calculate the intensities of the zeroth and the first and the second order Bragg peaks. And for the Kagome lattice, it turns out that the ratio of the zeroth to the first order Bragg peak is 1/9. And this is the predicted intensities from theory. It's essentially the structure factor of the Kagome lattice. This is from theory. And in the experiment, you can see a very similar looking pattern. And actually, I've not shown that figure, but if you calculate the numbers, it is very close to 1/9. So that is evidence that we do indeed have a Kagome lattice in the lab, an optical Kagome lattice. So we have a Kagome lattice. The next question is, what do you do with it? So of course, there's a lot of literature on bosons in a Kagome lattice, and you can get many interesting phases. Bosons are usually described by a Bose-Hubbard model of some sort. This is a very general Hamiltonian with nearest neighbor hopping, second nearest neighbor hopping, the chemical potential, on-site repulsion, nearest neighbor repulsion. You can add a host of terms and get many interesting phases. However, in the lab, all these extra terms are usually very, very small. The only terms that are significant are nearest neighbor hopping, chemical potential can be controlled by hand, and on-site interaction. So these are the only things that you usually have in a lab. And with that, what can you do? Oh, there's actually another problem. It turns out the signs of the matrix elements are such that the flat band is actually on top. And therefore, if you simply put the particles into the lattice, they won't go into the flat band. They'll stay in this curved band. And therefore, this flat band physics is also harder to access in the lab. So we have this very simple Hubbard model. The flat band is on the top. What can you get with that? Well, to start with, you can get the usual Fisher diagram, superfluid and Mott phases. So since the Kagome lattice is obtained by doing something to a triangular lattice, you can get a phase transition between the superfluid and Mott insulators as a function of the lattice geometry. So it's not a new phase, it's nothing very exotic, but it's still something that cannot be done in materials. You cannot tune the lattice geometry dynamically, but that's something that can be done in the system. So that's somewhat interesting, but it's not a new phase. We understand superfluids and Mott insulators very well. But with some more work, you can get some more exotic phases. And that's what I'll mention some examples of things that people have done in the past and mention a few ideas for how you can access those states. So most of the examples involve more complicated interactions, something beyond this. So I'll sort of tell you or give hints towards how those extra terms could be obtained in the system that we have here. Yeah. Yes, this is a Mott insulator, and this is a superfluid.
Shades.
Well, no, different shades, though, they're the same phase. Yeah. So what the different colors show are the strength of the superfluid order parameter. So inside the Mott insulator, that is zero. And far away from the lobes, it is with some, say one, it's normalized to say one. So it varies from 0 to 1 as you go from the left to right. So the different shades just tell you the different values of that order parameter. But it's still the same phase. It's all superfluid here. Well, so it's done discretely. So it goes in steps. Otherwise, it varies continuously. And then, yeah. No, this is theory. It's theory and fairly roll-less. It's simple mean field theory and not very high resolution. That's why it goes in steps. Otherwise, it actually varies continuously. Okay. So there are two main ideas that I will talk about. The first is that of shaking a lattice. By shaking, I mean physically shaking the whole lattice. And that is something that can be done in optical lattice experiments. So since the lattice positions are defined by how the standing wave pattern from the laser forms, so you can change the phases of the lasers dynamically and shake the whole lattice. So what does it do to the system? Well, first of all, how do you treat the shaking? The shaking is treated very classically. So K is some number that tells you the amplitude of the shaking. And the term here is proportional to the position of the lattice site. So it's a sum over j times nj. Nj is the particle number, and j is the position. So this is just an electric field, an oscillating electric field. So the shaking is treated very classically, and usually, or in this model, the frequency of the shaking is taken to be very high. It's much higher than all the other energy scales in the problem. Why is that useful? It is useful because then you can write down an effective time-independent Hamiltonian defined as the average of the oscillating Hamiltonian over one period of the shaking, of the oscillation. Okay, so discretize time and average over one period of the oscillation and write down an effective time-independent Hamiltonian. Now this term, it commutes with the chemical potential and all other interactions, but it does not commute with the hopping part. And what that does is, it gives a Hamiltonian that is very similar to the original one, but the hopping part is multiplied by some Bessel function of the amplitude and the frequency. Okay, that gives an effective Hamiltonian where the hopping part is replaced by this. So this is what I've drawn here as the zeroth Bessel function. Why this is useful is because by tuning the amplitude and the frequency, you can make this, the nearest neighbor hopping, very small or even change sign. And this actually has been done in experiments before, not on the Kagome lattice. It's been done on the triangular lattice, but this has been done before. And you can expect to get superfluid to more transitions as a function of shaking the amplitude, because that is essentially reducing the hopping strength. So you can get an effective Hamiltonian with a different hopping. Yes.
Why is the effective Hamiltonian?
It's the same as this. Okay. Same as this part, so except that W is replaced by it.
So what states are you throwing away?
So what I'm doing is averaging over an oscillation. So I'm not throwing away any states. Replacing a time-independent Hamiltonian by some Hamiltonian, some time-independent Hamiltonian. Replacing a time-dependent by a time-independent Hamiltonian.
So yeah, this is the limit where omega is very large.
Yes, that is it. So if you want to be very particular, actually, a state with an energy E is the same as a state with energy E plus omega. So this is periodic in energy. But we are, okay, so you asked what states are you throwing away? I'm throwing away states that are in a different energy Brillouin zone. Since this is periodic in energy, I'm throwing away states that differ from the original energy by omega or 2 omega or any multiple of omega.
But in the large omega limit,
mm-hmm.
That omega is larger than any energy scale in the problem, I guess.
Yes. So it's like so for example, in lattice models, we often take a continuum limit and ignore all processes like Umklapp scattering, or ignore processes where the momentum changes by a reciprocal lattice vector. We throw away all that. This is the same, but doing that in energy. Okay, so you get this effective Hamiltonian with a new hopping. So that was on a 1D lattice. On the Kagome lattice,
since we do want to preserve the Kagome-ness, we want to extract properties of the Kagome lattice, we want to have some rotational symmetry. So the right way to shake the lattice is actually moving it around in a circle. That preserves the rotational symmetry. So again, that replaces the hopping by some effective hopping as a function of the something that depends on the amplitude and frequency. And this can be tuned to zero. Like I said, it can be tuned to zero or even made to change sign. So if the sign is changed, the flat band comes to the bottom, and then it becomes easier to access that. Or if it is tuned to zero, then that effectively enhances other interactions in the system, like nearest neighbor repulsion, second neighbor hopping, and so on. And those kind of interactions are usually needed to get some more exotic phases. So this is what you can get by shaking the lattice. So, yeah. And here's a quick review of some literature that exists for
more complicated interactions are present, or when the flat band is at the bottom. So for example, you can show that when the flat band is at the bottom and the filling is 1/9, you get this translational symmetry broken phase. So there is exactly one boson on each hexagon, and every third hexagon is occupied. And it turns out you can actually prove this exactly. There's an approximation in finding this ground state. There's another work which was done by Roger Melko. He's one of the authors, Roger Melko at Waterloo. So they showed that if you have hardcore bosons, that means U is infinity, and also strong nearest neighbor repulsion, then you can get a state that looks like this. So this circle here is like a hexagon here. There's one boson on the circle. And there are also bosons at the intersections of the triangles. So it at 1/3 filling, I think you have one boson here and one here. At 2/3, I think you have two bosons here and one here, something like that. So you get another symmetry broken phase. And this also, so this happens when you have nearest neighbor repulsion. It doesn't care whether the flat band is at the bottom or the top. Some other phases which do not break translational symmetry are in the literature are these. So the first one is where the up and down triangles are different. So there is translational symmetry in the Kagome lattice, but these triangles are different. So the hopping within one of these dark triangles is larger than the hopping across the dark triangles. And in that case, you can get a Mott insulator at 1/3 filling. So there's one particle every three sites. So it's a fraction filling of 1/3. You get a Mott insulator. Also at half filling, these people showed that you always get a superfluid phase. And with a more complicated model, so this had a four-site ring exchange term. So this is quite unrealistic. It requires this complicated model, complicated term to be much bigger than the nearest neighbor hopping. But there's some, they propose that you can get a Z to spin liquid phase. So that's what you can get by shaking the lattice. Another idea is tilting the lattice. And this also has been done in theory as well as an experiment on a 1D lattice. So let me quickly explain what happens when you tilt the lattice. So let's look at the lower figure. Let's say your lattice is flat and there's one particle on each side. Then you tilt the lattice and ensure that the tilt is very close to the on-site repulsion. So should I have written that here? I have not. If the on-site repulsion, but the hopping is much smaller than the tilt. So let's say W, the hopping is 0. And the tilt is very close, but slightly greater than the on-site repulsion. Then what you get is a state where there are alternately 0 and 2 particles on each side. So let's say this one hops here and stays there. This one hops here and stays there, and so on. Now you might think that since the lattice is tilted, the particles would flow all the way down to the end. But that actually does not happen. And the reason for that is because optical lattices are very isolated systems, and they don't interact much with the environment. And therefore, it is hard for them to lose energy. And therefore, even though all the particles flowing down to the end might be the lowest energy state, it is the lattice has to lose a lot of energy to get to that state. And therefore, since it cannot lose energy, this state here is very, very stable. So it's a metastable state, but it is fairly long-lived. And it can be seen in experiments too. So we get this state, unusual state, with 0 and 2 particles on alternate sides. What's interesting about this is that we got this only from a Hamiltonian that had nearest neighbor and on-site repulsion. We didn't have to add any more complicated interactions. But we still got a state that had some sort of bipartiteness to it. And since the Kagome lattice is not bipartite, it's very natural to imagine that doing this to the Kagome lattice will give some more interesting physics. So, and that's what I'm coming to next. So for the Kagome lattice, there are two special directions. You can either tilt it perpendicular to a principal axis or along a principal axis. So if you tilt it perpendicular to a principal axis, what happens is that 0 2 configuration can either form this way, as I've shown on this one, or it can form in that direction. And they both have exactly the same energy. And therefore, there is some freedom in choosing which way this dipole is formed. And you can actually work out that this effectively gives a state where particles can hop freely in this direction along these blue shaded lines, but they cannot hop in the perpendicular direction. So it decouples the Kagome lattice into many 1D chains, into Luttinger liquids. The other case, which I think is more interesting, is when you tilt along a principal axis. So let me actually draw that on the blackboard. It's not drawn a very nice figure here. So what I'll do is, let me explain that here on the blackboard. I'll just hold it in my hand. Okay, so I'll draw Kagome lattice. Done something wrong there. Yeah, there you go. Okay, that is a very ugly Kagome lattice. And I'm tilting it this way. And I'll tune the tilt such that the energy difference between this side and that is very close to the nearest neighbor repulsion. So call that energy difference E. E is very close to U. So in that limit, what can happen is, if there was one particle on each side to start with, if the tilt is slightly greater than U, then this will go to a 0, 2 state. Right? And that can happen all over the lattice. So you can have 0, 2 here, say 0, 2 here. However, something more can happen now. What can also happen is this 2, 2 can become 1, 3. So one particle from here can go further down the slope, and this site will have three particles, and this will have one to minimize energy. So therefore, so let me call this configuration a dimer. And also notice that since the dimers are only formed along the tilted bonds, these horizontal bonds play no role. So I might as well erase them. So what we are left with is a lattice that looks like this. Okay, and we have dimers forming along some of these bonds. Or I've called a 1-3 configuration a dimer, but you can check that the 1 is always preceded by 0, so might as well call this whole thing a dimer. So we'll have dimers on these bonds. So this is simply a square lattice. It's slightly stretched, but it has the same topology as a square lattice. And the ground state of the system is a set of dimer coverings on the square lattice. So we started with a Kagome lattice, tilted it, and got a state which is a dimer model on the square lattice. Yes. No, it is E minus U. So the Hamiltonian I have is the interaction, well, the parts that contain U and E are this. So n n and n plus 1 n minus 1 are degenerate when e and u are equal. Yeah, no matter what the n is. So 1 1 can become 0 2, 2 2 can become 1 3, and so on. So what you get at the end of the day is a diamond model on a square lattice. Now a problem here is that what you would ideally like to do is go across the whole phase diagram of a diamond model on a square lattice. That would be very interesting. If you can, this diamond model normally contains two terms. One is a dimer flipping term and a dimer-dimer interaction. So for those of you who are not very familiar with diamond models, let me write those two terms here. So there are two kinds of terms that are usually present in dimer models, especially in the square lattice. There's one term that takes you between these two states. And there is another term that gives a higher, gives a different energy to this state compared to something like that, where the dimers are not parallel to each other. So for this model, it turns out that this is not very hard to get. You can get this dimer-dimer interaction at order t squared over u. But this term turns out to be much more complicated. It looks like so ideally, you would like to vary this ratio all the way from 0 to infinity, if not minus infinity to infinity. But here it looks like this ratio is always much smaller than that. So this is a very classical dimer model. But if anybody has ideas on how to increase this ratio, I can tell you more about the model in detail if you like. But that would be very interesting. So that's a somewhat interesting phase that you can get from get by tilting a Kagome lattice. So that's what I've explained here. One more thing that can be done. Experimentally, it is more complicated. You have to add another laser. So I tried to suggest this to the experimentalists, and they said, you do it. I'm not doing that. But theoretically, it might still be interesting. And that is, if you add another laser, you can effectively insert fluxes into the lattice. So you add another lasers, and what happens is these bonds the hopping elements become complex, and certain fluxes are introduced. And what these fluxes do is they give churn numbers to these bands. The flat band picks up a churn number of 2, and the curved bands pick up churn numbers of minus 1 each. Or it could be minus 2, 1, 1. So this is, again, slightly interesting because normally when we talk of flat bands and churn number together, we think of states like the fractional quantum Hall effect. But unfortunately, that is unlikely to happen here because when you talk about a flat band, a band is really flat when the curvature of the bands, the wiggles in the bands, are much smaller than the energy gap. But here it turns out the energy gap is actually very small and the curvature is much more. But anyway, you can still get an ordinary quantum Hall effect. And that is, again, somewhat interesting. So these are some ideas that we have been thinking about, shaking the lattice to access more complicated interactions, tilting it to get some unusual phases, phases that you would normally think are not at all related to the lattice that we started with, and in
introducing churn numbers to the bands. And if any of you have more ideas for what can be done with this lattice, that would be great. We'd be love to hear them. And thanks for your attention.
Can one put formulas?
Put formulas?
Yeah.
Well, yes. In principle, it can be done. The current setup that they have is not. They don't have the lab set up to put formulas, but yes, that can be done. So, do you think there'll be something more interesting with formulas, or
given that we have flipped and catch something?
So one of the phases that I mentioned at 1/9th filling, we get a Wigner crystal phase at 1/9th filling, and that turns out to happen for both fermions and bosons. It doesn't matter what statistics the particles have. So that is an exact solution, but at more higher, at some higher rational fillings or commensurate fillings, there are some proposals. Actually, one of the papers I mentioned does talk about what happens when you put fermions. And you get some more insulating states as you increase the filling. You're going to commensurate fillings, but not integer fillings. You get some more insulating phases. So yeah, that would be a very good thing to do. Right now, their lab is not set up to put fermions. Yes, I'll mention this to them. Yeah.
Can you add shaking to the last setup you have with the fluxes?
So shaking can be done, yes.
And will that shift the bands, like in the previous?
Yes, it will shift the bands. Yeah.
The churn numbers remain the same.
Oh, the bands with the churn numbers, yes. They will remain the same. All the shaking does is change the sign of the hopping. So it will change the curvature, the Fermi velocity, things like that. But it won't change the churn number.
More questions? So flipping the sign of a hopping by shaking. So that sign comes from essentially the dynamical phase of cumulative turning to shaking instead.
Yes. Yeah, so you can think of this as during a period a particle can hop back and forth and so shaking, it encloses, I think the shaking term is, it does end up enclosing the flux. It is just the phase that the particle picks up as it hops from one side to the other.
So can it create some general complex phase, or does it have to be just plus or minus?
So it turns out, if you include the states that we dropped out, that the states in the other Brillouin zones, if you include those states, then hopping from one Brillouin zone to the other in energy, those hoppings can have complex phases. So they turn out to have complex imaginary phases. So if you include those terms, then you have two kinds of hoppings within the Brillouin zone, within the energy Brillouin zone, and across energy Brillouin zones. So together, the phase can be complex, yes. Yeah, but those terms are usually very small, because this those terms are of the order W over. Those terms are of order W is the hopping over the frequency. And we are assuming this is very small. So you see, if you include, it can have small imaginary parts. Imaginary corrections, and yes, in general, can have a complex phase.
Can you repeat why you have to shake the lattice circularly?
Sorry?
Can you repeat why you have to shake the lattice in a circle?
Oh, that is to preserve the rotational symmetry of the Kagome lattice.
But if you just shake the entire thing left and right?
So then what happens is, Oh, well, this is the slide. So if you shake it, only so. The change in the hopping depends on the magnitude of the bond if you shake it circularly. On the other hand, if you shake it only in one direction, then only those bonds will get affected. Only the strength of those bonds will change. So for example, if you shake it this horizontally, then these bonds, the horizontal lines, will have different strengths. They'll pick up these Bessel functions. But these bonds will also pick up Bessel functions, but of some different strength. The factor here will be different. Will be, there'll be some cos 60 degrees or some sine or cosine factors. So that will break the rotational symmetry of the lattice. So the short answer is the shaking only affects, it changes the bond strength in the direction of the shaking. So if you shake a 2D lattice one way, in just one direction, that will only affect the bonds in that direction. It won't affect the perpendicular bonds.
Is it easy to understand why you get a flat band? And is it just in the Kagome lattice that you get that? Or?
No, there are other lattices where you can get a flat band.
Just by hopping terms?
Yes, just by hopping terms. So the decorated square lattice, the square lattice with one particle, with a site at the center of each bond, also has a flat band. And the honeycomb lattice with p orbitals instead of s orbitals. Since p orbitals have a different symmetry. So if you have px and py orbitals on a honeycomb lattice, then you get four bands in all because there are two orbitals and two sites in the Prevoy lattice. And that has Dirac ones as well as flat bands. So I don't know any general rule for what kind of lattices give flat bands, but there are several examples. Maybe there is something common to all of them, but I don't know.
The principle is shaking can be done in electronic material. Maybe the frequency scale has to be much larger.
Yes. Yes. It has to be.
So what is the frequency scale? Can be for optical lens?
So this shaking was for the optical lattice. This was I think around gigahertz. Well, so that depends on what these parameters are. It depends on the, to get something significant you need, you need this to be, this to have some value relative to the length of the bonds. And that depends on the wavelength of the laser. So the wavelength is like 500 nanometers or so, using ordinary visible light lasers, 500,000 nanometers. So for material, this bond length is much smaller. It is 3 to 4 orders of magnitude smaller. You need a much smaller frequency.
Smaller? But usually in mm-hmm. real material, the shaking is usually nadir than nadir. Because mm-hmm. the energy scale is much larger than optical length.
Yes, but here it looks like it depends on the ratio of the bond length to the frequency. So it's a good question, what would happen in a real lattice? Well, I think in a real lattice, I don't know if you can, the same physics probably applies if the experiment can be done that way. I don't think you can actually shake a material the way you want.
So k times r has the dimension of energy, right? K times r.
Yes, r is a dimensionless unit zero. But yeah, it has the dimensions of energy.
Okay. So here is kind of mini Kelvin scale.
In temperatures, this is.
I guess what I'm saying is that in real material, that scale is much larger.
Mm-hmm.
So, it seems that the universe is larger. perhaps some innovation.
That could be true, that's probably true. But I also think in real materials, it would be harder to do this in a controlled way. And which is why this physics may not show up. Because if you shake the lattice, you'd also create phonons, etc. In optical lattices, there are no phonons. So I think the phonons might mess up this physics in a material. But yeah, what you're saying is also probably true.
Questions? Let's make again.